Hi there. Welcome to part two of the Superman and the Bugout. I'm Cory Doctorow, and this is my podcast. The story, as you just heard, is the Superman and the Bugout, the third part of a little linked cycle of stories that starts with Shadow of the Mothership, continues with Home Again, and concludes with this one. This story was originally published in On Spec magazine, the Canadian science fiction magazine, and subsequently reprinted in my short story collection, A Place So Foreign and Eight More, and you can download the full text of this story from craphound.com/place under a Creative Commons license. I'm in Nashville today. I'm here to speak at the Red Hat Summit, and they've put me up in a very nice room here. I'm a little bushed. I spent last night on an airplane, and that always takes it out of me. I think I'm getting old. Anyway, here's part two. Hope you enjoy it. One more part to go, and then we'll be on to the next story. Talk to you later. Hershey decided he needed to patrol a little to clear his head. He scooped trash and syringes from Grenadier Pond. He flew silently through High Park, ears cocked for any muggings. Nothing. He patrolled the Gardner Expressway next, and used his heat vision to melt some black ice. Feeling useless, he headed for home. He was most of the way up Yonge Street when he heard the siren, a cop car driving fast down Jarvis. He sighed his father's sigh and rolled east, heading into Regent Park, locating the Dopplering siren. He touched down lightly on top of one of the ugly squat tenements and skipped from roof to roof until he spotted the cop. He was beefy, with the traditional mustache and the flak vest that they all wore on downtown patrol. He was leaning against the hood of his cruiser, panting, his breath clouding around him. A kid rolled on the ground, clutching his groin, gasping for breath. His infrared signature throbbed painfully between his legs. Clearly, he'd just been kicked in the nuts. The cop leaned into his cruiser and lowered the volume on his radio, then, without warning, kicked the kid in the small of the back. The kid rolled on the ice, thrashing. Before Hershey knew what he was doing, he was hovering over the ice between the cop and the kid. The cat eyes embedded in the emblem on his chest glowed in the street lamps. The cop's eyes widened so that Hershey could see the whites around his pupils. Hershey stared. "What do you think you're doing?" he said, after a measured silence. The cop took a step back and slipped a little on the ice before catching himself on his cruiser. "Since when do you kick unarmed civilians in the back?" He ran away. I had to catch him. I wanted to teach him not to run. By inspiring his trust in the even-handedness of Toronto's finest? Hershey could see the cooling tracks of the cruiser skidding and weaving through the projects. The kid put up a good chase. Behind him, he heard the kid regain his feet and start running. The cop started forward, but Hershey stopped him with one finger, dead center, in the flak jacket. "You can't let him get away!" "I can catch him. Trust me. But first, we're going to wait for your backup to arrive, and I'm going to file a report." A Sun reporter arrived before the backup unit. Hershey maintained stony silence in the face of his questions, but he couldn't stop the man from listening in on his conversation with the old constable who showed up a few minutes later as he filed his report. He found the kid a few blocks away, huddled in an alley, hand pressed to the small of his back. He took him to Mount Sinai's Emerge and turned him over to a uniformed cop. The hysterical Sun headlines that vilified Hershey for interfering with the cops sparked a round of recriminating voicemails from his mother, filled with promises to give him such a zets in the head when she saw him next. He folded his tights and cape and stuffed them in the back of his closet and spent a lot of time in the park for the next few weeks. He liked to watch the kids playing, a United Nations in miniature, kids' parents looking on amiably, stymied by the language barrier that their kids hurdled with ease. On March 1st, he took his tights out of the overstuffed hall closet and flew to Ottawa to collect his pension. He touched down on the Parliament Hill and was instantly surrounded by high-booted RCMP constables, looking slightly panicky. He held his hands up, startled. "What gives, guys?" "Sorry, sir," one said. "High security today. One of them is speaking in Parliament." "Them?" "The Bugouts. Come down to have a chat about neighborly relations. Authorized personnel only today." "Well, that's me," Hershey said, and started past him. The constable, looking extremely unhappy, moved to block him. "I'm sorry, sir, but that's not you. Only people on my list. My orders, I'm afraid." Hershey looked into the man's face and thought about hurtling skyward and flying straight into the building. The man was only doing his job, though. "Look, it's payday. I have to go see the Minister of Defense. I've been doing it every month for years." "I know that, sir, but today is a special day. Perhaps you could return tomorrow?" "Tomorrow? My rent is due today, Sergeant. Look, what if I call his office? Please, sir, that would be fine. The sergeant looked relieved. Hershey hit a speed dial and waited. A recorded voice told him that the office was closed, the minister at a special session. He's in session. Look, it's probably on his desk. I've been coming here for years. Really, this is ridiculous. I'm sorry, sir. I have my orders. I don't think you could stop me, Sergeant. The sergeant and his troop shuffled their feet. You're probably right, sir, but orders are orders. You know, Sergeant, I retired a full colonel from the armed forces. I could order you to let me past. Sorry, sir. No, this is a different chain of command. Hershey controlled his frustration with an effort of will. Fine, then. I'll be back tomorrow. The building super wasn't pleased about the late rent. He threatened Hershey with eviction, told him he was in violation of the lease, quoted the relevant sections of the ironically named Tenant Protection Act from memory, then grudgingly gave in to Hershey's pleas. Hershey had half a mind to put on his costume and let the man see what a real super was like. But his secret identity was sacrosanct. Even in the era of Pax Aeliana, the Superman had lots of enemies, all of whom had figured out, long before, that even the invulnerable have weaknesses, their friends and families. It terrified him to think of what a bitter, obsolete, grudge-bearing terrorist might do to his mother, to Thomas, or even his old high school girlfriends. For his part, Thomas refused to acknowledge the risk. He was more worried about the powers that be than mythical terrorists. The papers the next day were full of the overnight cabinet shuffle in Ottawa. More than half the cabinet had been relegated to the backbenches. Many of their portfolios had been eliminated or amalgamated into the new super portfolios, domestic affairs, trade, and extraterrestrial affairs. The old Minister of Defense, who'd once had Hershey over for Thanksgiving dinner, was banished to the lowest hell of the backbench. His portfolio had been subsumed into extraterrestrial affairs, and the new minister, a young up-and-comer named Woolley, wasn't taking Hershey's calls. Hershey called Thomas to see if he could loan him rent money. Thomas laughed. "Chicken's coming home to roost, huh?" he said. "What's that supposed to mean?" Hershey said hotly. "Well, there's only so much shit-disturbing you can do before someone sits up and take notice. The Belkis is probably bugged, or maybe one of the commies is an informer. Either way, you're screwed. Especially with Woolley." "Why, what's wrong with Woolley?" Hershey had met him in passing at the Prime Minister's Office Affairs, a well-dressed 29-year-old. He seemed like a nice enough guy. "What's wrong with him?" Thomas nearly screamed. "He's the frickin' Antichrist! He was the one that came up with the idea of selling advertising on Squeegee Kids' T-shirts! He's heavily supported by private security outfits. He makes Darth Vader look like a swell guy. That slick-down, blow-dried asshole..." Hershey cut him off. Okay, I get the idea. "No, you don't, Soup. You don't get the half of it. This guy isn't your average liberal. Those guys are usually basic opportunists. He's a zealot. He'd like to beat us with truncheons. I went to one of his debates, and he showed up with a baseball bat. He tried to hit me with it." "What were you doing at the time?" "What does it matter? Violence is never an acceptable response. I've thrown pies at better men than him." Hershey grinned. Thomas hadn't invented pieing, but his contributions to the art were seminal. "Thomas, the man is a federal minister with obligations. He can't just write me off. He'll have to pay me." "Sure, sure," Thomas crooned. "Of course he will. Who ever heard of a politician abusing his office to advance his agenda? I don't know what I was thinking. I apologize." Hershey touched down on Parliament Hill, heart racing. Thomas's warning echoed in his head. His memories of Woolley were already morphing, so that the slick, neat kid became feral, predatory. The hill was marshy and cold and gray, and as he squelched up to the main security desk, he felt a cold ooze of mud infiltrate its way into his super booty. There was a new RCMP constable on duty, a turban Sikh. Normally, he felt awkward around the Sikhs and the Mounties. He imagined that their lack of cultural context made his tights and emblems seem absurd, that they evoked grins beneath the Sikhs' fierce mustaches. But today he was glad the man was a Sikh, another foreigner, with an uneasy berth in the Canadian military-industrial complex. The Sikh was expressionless as Hershey squirted his clearances from his comm to the security desk's transceiver. Imperturbably, the Sikh squirted back directions to Woolley's new office, just a short jaunt from the exalted heights of the PMO. The minister's office was guarded by a dignified antique door that had the rich finish of wood that had been buffed daily for 2 centuries, an RCMP constable in plain clothes, a young, handsome receptionist in a silk navy power suit, a slightly older office manager whose heart-stopping beauty was only barely restrained by her chaste blouse and skirt, and finally, a pair of boardroom doors with spotless brass handles and a retinal scanner. Each obstacle took more time to weather than the last, so that it was nearly an hour before the office manager stared fixedly into the scanner until the locks opened with a soft clack. Hershey squelched in, leaving a slushy dribble on the muted industrial-grade brown carpet. Willie knelt on the stool of an ergonomic work cart, enveloped in an articulated nest of displays, comms, keyboards, data gloves, immersive headsets, styli, sticky notes, and cup holders. His posture, hair, and expression rivaled one another for flawlessness. "Hello, hello," he said, giving Hershey's hand a dry, firm pump. He smelled of expensive talc and leather car interiors. He led Hershey to a pair of stark Scandinavian chairs whose polished lead undersides bristled with user interface knobs. The old minister's taste had run to imposing oak desks and horsehair club chairs, and Hershey felt a moment's disorientation as he sank into the brilliantly functional sitting machine. It chittered like a roulette wheel and shifted to firmly support him. "Thanks for seeing me," Hershey said. He caught his reflection in the bulletproof glass windows that faced out over the Rideau Canal and felt a flush of embarrassment when he saw how clownish his costume looked in the practical environs. Willie favored him with half a smile, and stared sincerely with eyes that were widely spaced, clever and hazel, surrounded by smile lines. The man fairly oozed charisma. "I should be thanking you. I was just about to call you to set up a meeting." "Then why haven't you been taking my calls?" Hershey thought. Lamely, he said, "You were?" "I was. I wanted to touch base with you, clarify the way that we're going to operate from now on. Hershey felt his gorge rise. "From now on?" "I phrased that badly. What I meant to say is, this is a new cabinet, a new ministry. It has its own modus operandi." "How can it have its own modus operandi when it was only created last night?" Hershey said, hating the petulance in his voice. "Oh, I like to keep lots of contingency plans on hand. The time to plan for major changes is far in advance. Otherwise, you'd run around trying to get office furniture and telephones installed when you need to be seizing opportunity." It struck Hershey now how finished the office was, the staff, the systems, the security. He imagined Willie hearing the news of his appointment and calling up files containing schematics, purchase orders, staff requisitions. It wasn't exactly devious, but it certainly teetered on the meridian separating planning and plotting. "Well, you certainly seem to have everything in order. I've been giving some thought to your payment arrangement. Do you know that there's a whole body of policy relating to your pension?" Hershey nodded, not liking where this was going. "Well, that's just not sensible," Willie said, sensibly. "The Canadian government already has its own pension apparatus. We make millions of direct deposits every day for welfare, pensions, employment insurance, mother's allowance, and so on. We're up to our armpits in payment infrastructure. And having you fly up to Ottawa every month, well, it's ridiculous. This is the 21st century. We have better ways of moving money around. So I've been giving it some thought, and I've come up with a solution that should make everything easier for everyone. I'm going to transfer your pension to the Canada Pension Plan offices. They'll make a monthly deposit directly to your account. I've got the paperwork all filled out here. All you need to do is fill in your banking information and your social insurance number." "But I don't have a social insurance number or a bank account," Hershey said. Of course, Hershey Abramowitz had both, but the Superman didn't. "How do you pay taxes, then?" Willie had a dangerous smile. "Well, I," Hershey stammered, "I don't. I'm tax-exempt. I've never had to pay taxes or get a bank account. I just take my checks to the Canadian Union of Public Employees Credit Union, and they cash them for me. It's the arrangement." Willie shook his head. "Who told you were tax-exempt?" he asked, wonderingly. "No one is tax-exempt except status Indians. And as to not having a bank account, well, you can open an account at the QP Credit Union, and we'll make the deposits there, but not until this tax status matter is cleared up. You have to talk to Revenue Canada about getting a social insurance number and get that information to Canada Pensions." "I pay taxes through my secret identity." "But does this," he made quote marks with his fingers, "secret identity declare your pension income?" "Of course I don't. I have to keep my secret identity a secret. His voice was shrill in his own ears. "It's a secret identity. I served in the forces as the Superman, so I get paid as the Superman. Tax-exempt, no bank accounts, no social insurance number. Just a check every month." Wooly leaned back and clasped his hands in his lap. "I know that's how it used to be, but what I'm trying to tell you today is that arrangement, however long-standing, however well-intentioned, wasn't proper, or even legal. It had to end sometime. You're retired now. You don't need your secret identity," again with the finger quotes. "If you already have a sin, you can just give it to me, along with your secret identity's bank information, and we can have your pension processed in a week or two." "A week or two?" Hershey bellowed. "I need to pay my rent. That's not how it works." Wooly stood abruptly. "No, sir, that is how it works. I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm trying to expedite things for you during this time of transition. But you need to meet me halfway. You could give me your SIN and account information right now. I could speed things up considerably, I'm sure. I'm willing to make that effort, even though things are very busy here." Hershey toyed with the idea of demolishing the man's office, turning his lovely furniture into molten nacho topping, and finishing it up by leaving the man dangling by his suit from the CN Tower's needle. But his mother would kill him. "I can't give you my secret identity," Hershey said pleadingly. "It's a matter of national security. I just need enough to pay my rent." Wooly stared at the ceiling for a long, long time. "There is one thing," he said. "Yes," Hershey said, hating himself for the note of hope in his voice. "The people at Defense Fest 33 called my office yesterday to see if I'd appear as a guest speaker with a patron Iksker Pat. I had to turn them down, of course. I'm far too busy right now. But I'm sure they'd be happy to have a veteran of your reputation in that slot, and it carries a substantial honorarium. I could call them and give them your comm." Hershey thought of Thomas, and of the rent, and of his mother, and of all the people at the Belkis who'd stared mistrustfully at him. "Have 'em call me," he sighed. "I'll talk to them." He got to his feet, the toe of his boot squelching out more dirt pudding.